Hey guys, welcome to the show. Today we have two engineers talking about one subject. So without further ado, let's play the music. Hey guys, and welcome to the show. We've got Dimitri Lazine and John Rodriguez with us today, and these guys are going to talk to us about cloud security. How's it going, guys?
Doing great, thank you.
It's the perfect day to talk about cloud security, especially since there's not a cloud in the sky here.
What a segue, Lex. What a segue.
This is going to be a fun show, I can tell already.
Oh, yeah. Cloud security is something near and dear to our hearts, Dimitri's and mine. And honestly, it's something where I think that a lot of customers late to embrace the cloud have some misunderstandings about what cloud security really means. And honestly, I should shut up for a minute and let Dimitri take this, since he's actually our practice lead on cloud security. So Dimitri, why don't you save me from myself?
Hi, you're doing very well. So sounds like you've done this show many times and perfectly kind of fitted to talk about all kind of different topics. But yeah, cloud security, as you mentioned, it's a new topic to many customers, and many customers trying to figure out how to approach this subject with their new, in their current environments with new applications. What personally I see many times with some of our customers is that they don't really fully understand yet how to approach this topic, because most of our customers as of today have their policies, especially security policies, developed for on-premises environments. On-premise environments is that basically their data centers. So when they look at their cloud security or applications, let's say they decide to adopt Office 365 or any other type of application that run in PaaS or infrastructure as a service Azure environment, their security people look at that, the cloud environments, and think, okay, we need to apply the same security policies, same security controls that we apply to our on-premises data centers. We should apply the same type of controls to the cloud-based workloads. And many times they cannot do this. Many times they try to fight, and because they misunderstand or they just slow to adopt those new controls of how it needs to be done in the cloud. So
let me cut in for a second. When we talk about IT environments, really there are five different types of services that people can have. There's purely on-premises with nothing connected to the cloud. There's a hybrid where they've got on-premises connected to some form of cloud. But right, you and I, when we talk about cloud, it's often kind of grouping multiple things together. But you mentioned infrastructure as a service, which for the sake of brevity, we'll call IaaS for the rest of the show. And then there's PaaS, platform as a service, PaaS. And then there's SaaS, software as a service. And each of those brings different things with it, different levels of, you could say, involvement from the customer. And just because you've used one over the other doesn't mean that you have no responsibilities as a customer for securing those resources. And I know that you personally have encountered issues where customers simply misunderstand. They think that, oh, I use software as a service, I have no security responsibilities whatsoever. No, that is not the case at all. There are still many responsibilities that you have. You've outsourced control of the application stack and control of the underlying virtual machines and hosts, but that doesn't mean that you don't have to worry about identity security or data security, right?
That's correct. And actually, when customers ask about what's really involved as part of the cloud security and securing their data, they worry about who controls the data, because they want to make sure that the cloud provider doesn't have or control their data that they put in the cloud. And as you mentioned, software as a service, it is still customer responsibility to control their identity, how they authenticate into the environment. If they want to provide or implement like a multi-factor authentication controls. And it's a customer responsibility actually to manage and control the data itself. So the cloud provider usually does not have access to the data. in only certain situations when, you know, per customer special request that engineers can potentially get access to it, but it has to be done via proper security type of, you know, access controls. But otherwise, it's really 100% customer responsibility to manage that data in the cloud environment, even as software as a service. Because, again, if they use, say, you know, OneDrive for business, so it's email or what, it is their data that basically sits in our data centers. Even so, we provide the application. We will patch the application on the back end, so they don't have to worry about those type of aspects of security. But the data is still, it's fully under their control.
So from a customer standpoint, their security responsibility is lessened a little bit, right? Because they don't have to worry about physical security, because that's us. They don't have to worry about patches, security patches for the OS or for the application, depending on, you know, which offering they've bought into. But still, credentials is important. They have to manage credentials. Data is important. They have to manage the security of their own data, because those are things that kind of cross the boundary, right? Those are things that they interact with locally.
That's correct. Define
locally, Lex.
Well, I just mean, you know, that they have an interface too, is actually what I meant. Yeah.
Okay. They do have an interface, and I think that you've kind of put your finger on one of the tension points when it comes to discussing cloud security, is the customers, they look at it as if it's just a simple extension of their own data center. But unless you're doing something with what we call a CASB, a cloud access security broker, unless you're doing something with a CASB where you're introducing new edges and restricting access from the general internet to a particular area within the cloud, within a cloud service, local is any device that anybody is using anywhere. It could be my Surface here at home. It could be Dimitri's phone when he's in a cafe in Boulder. It could be your mobile phone when you're sitting in the airport and in Charlotte. So people need to think about where data can be accessed from, what are the access patterns, but they also need to think about the different types. You mentioned we take care of physical security no matter which cloud offering it is.
Right.
We take care of the data center. But if you're using SaaS, we auto-patch the application. If you're using PaaS or IaaS, we don't. We will patch the underlying operating system, certainly, but we're not going to patch the application that you've deployed as part of PaaS, because you own the application. And when it comes to infrastructure as a service, we're not even going to patch your virtual machines. You are still responsible for that. There's a fantastic graphic. It pops up in a bunch of different places, most of our cloud presentations.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. Are you talking about the one that has the stack?
Yep. It's basically...
If you have that, send that to us, because I'd love to put it up for our viewers.
Yep. It's aka.ms/securecustomer. So SECURE customer. And in early on in this poster, it's the Security in a Cloud-Enabled World poster that Mark Simos helped drive, and I believe he talked about earlier this year with you. It has a matrix where it shows which pieces customers no longer are responsible for and which ones they are. And ultimately, they're always responsible for identity and administration and data. You can't get away from managing those. And so
at the very least, right? At the very least, they're responsible for all three of those.
Yeah. If you move services to the cloud, you get out of the business of running a data center.
Right.
And then depending on how much you've invested in cloud computing, you may have divested some responsibilities, but you can never get rid of all of them. And those three are always there. If you deploy PaaS, you don't have to worry about patching a virtual machine, but you do have to worry about updating your application and so on. So depending on the actual amount that a customer has invested in, their security posture will be different. But one thing that, again, it's another of those interesting tensions, and I find it really fascinating. Customers lose control when they move to the cloud, but in most cases, they'll gain security simply because of the scale and the investment that Microsoft has put into cloud. And I don't mean this to sound like it's purely a Microsoft thing. Amazon do this, Rackspace does this. Any cloud provider worth their salt is going to be they're going to have mastered the physical security. So in order to get to a server, you must go through a man cage, biometric access, background checks, physical isolation of the different systems, a strong workflow that says that in order to touch that system, you must have had approvals from these people and your credentials are time-boxed and on and on and on. Customers typically don't do that on their own all that well. They're managing far too many things. They're not specialists in this. Well, the cloud providers are. So yes, customers cede a little control. They no longer control the OS, or they no longer control the application, but they're gaining security because they're giving it to people whose full-time job is maintaining the security and the safety and whatever of those applications, of those services.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is that I hear security being used as a reason all the time that customers are afraid to go to the cloud, right? I hear that all the time. Oh, well, you know, we manage our systems here, and, you know, how secure is it? You know, is it going to be, you know, offshored? Those are all major security concerns, especially for my customers because I have a government customer. And so the answer, of course, for government customers is no, it's going to be local, or at least in the U.S. But it's funny that you're right. I mean, that's what we do. We manage security, and we do it very, very, very well, and probably better than a lot of the customers manage their own local data centers.
The security concerns that many customers raise are actually control concerns and not security concerns at all.
Right. Yeah.
Same time, we have to stress, and every time we talk with the customers, that the way they do their administration of their Azure tenants or Office 365 deployments is still super important. The same type of cyber attacks still applicable even after they adopt the cloud-based type of, you know, solutions. So the way they do administration over their Active Directory today on premises environment is still applicable if they move the main controls into the cloud. Some of the new control they actually have to address to make sure that those virtual machines that run in the cloud are properly secured. The way they do administration over their tenants, it's still applicable. Sort of credential self-mitigation is still applicable. So they have to really careful to make sure that they adopt proper administration solution over their cloud-based deployments. So in the kind of when we talk with the customers, we're trying to stress this, and they kind of think that, oh, well, we're deploying in the cloud. You tell us it's all secure. Well, it is secure. We provide the secure foundation. But again, it's still you're responsible, as you mentioned, about managing identity management and management of data. And if you're adopting like PaaS or IaaS, you're responsible to manage virtual machines and applications and all the other workloads. So administration is still as important or more important as you adopt cloud-based solutions as in on-premises environments.
If only somebody had been on Lex's show recently to talk about a solution that would help customers securely administer a solution from a known good source, and that solution apply to cloud too.
And I think it was you, John, right? You talk about privileged access workstation.
I did indeed. Yeah. And hopefully by the time you're listening to us banter about this, that recording will be online on the Taser Premier Archive. As we think about the way the customers adopt cloud services, in many cases they're looking at it as if it's just purely an extension of their on-premises data center. We talked about how in most cases we strongly feel that we can do security, physical security, and OS and application security better. But there are additional things that cloud security brings to the table that simply aren't feasible for the smaller environments. Take something like Azure Security Center, where it's a solution, it's a web-based solution that can help surface issues that are occurring within your environment, whether it's potentially compromised identities, workstations that are connecting to your systems that are known to be compromised. And all of these different things would largely be impossible for a smaller scale company. But because Microsoft has such scale and we receive telemetry data through System Center Endpoint Protection, through Bing search, the search engine is across the web, through Exchange Online, Advanced Threat Protection, all of these different listening systems, synthesizing all that data together, and then turning around and using that to inform information in Azure Security Center, the cloud actually becomes even more secure, or security in the cloud becomes easier because you have more data to work with. This is big data and machine learning really brought to life and used to enhance the customer experience or the organization's experience. Of course, there's a downside to having all that data available. We're not the only ones who can do machine learning. So can the bad guys, unfortunately. And there's evidence that they're doing so, which takes us right back to Dimitri's point earlier about the need for planning and the need for secure administration.
Absolutely.
As we talk about cloud security kind of in general terms, a lot of the customers that I work with ask, is there something actionable? Are there specific things that we really need to look out for beyond what you've already talked about? And several of my colleagues, Mark Simos, again, and Heinrich Gantenbein, the three of us co-presented a session in Seattle a couple of months ago where we talked about some of the concerns. Security in a cloud-enabled world was the topic. And there were some really fascinating conversations that came out of it. And one of the things that Heinrich said that has stuck with me to this day is that the sharing economy and the cloud model have encouraged developers to do some things that they would never have done before. Sharing source code, for example. The internet makes it really easy for me to find a PowerShell script that does something. And it means that I can go to, say, GitHub and get some code to do something specific in my own environment. And it's great that I can go get that, but in order for me to get it, somebody had to upload it. And we find that developers are they're rushing to upload their code so that they can get thousands of hits from GitHub, but they're not looking in their code to see if they've left anything in there that they might not really want the world to have, like administrative credentials that control an Azure subscription or the storage keys for the Azure subscription. So attackers have actually taken to scanning GitHub, looking for this information, just to see which credentials can they find for either taking over an entire sub or accessing secure content in a storage account. We've actually taken to doing the same thing. The Azure security team is scanning GitHub, looking for information that would be used by attackers, and then we proactively alert the customers and say, hey, you probably don't want to have this information in that particular, that you don't want that information in GitHub. You might want to change these storage account keys, roll the primary, wait, roll the secondary. So that's just one example where people need to stop and think about the information that they're inadvertently presenting. And again, it's the cloud used for good and the cloud used for evil. There's nothing inherently good or bad about the cloud. It's just how somebody potentially uses it. So friends, don't let friends check code into GitHub that contains credentials or other important information.
Anything that's exploitable.
Yeah.
And I just want to add to it this. Majority of the, so if you're familiar with Azure, in infrastructure as a service especially. So we had two different models over the years. So we had one of them is basically a service-based deployment model, the original one that been used in Azure for the last few years. And over the last couple of years, we're moving to what's called Azure Resource Management. And so all the new deployments really being encouraged and done via Azure Resource Management. And most of those deployments can be done via automated scripted solutions. And as John mentioned, a lot of this can be developed in Visual Studio or some other development mechanism and posted into GitHub or other source management. So in some of the customers, when we talk with them, even if they use their internal source management solutions, they would post their solutions into their internal source management. And many times they would provide read access to those, to the code, to pretty much entire staff in their organizations. Same type of threat is applicable there as well. If they put any type of keys for like storage accounts, et cetera, that's all can be potentially exploitable by the bad guys. So that's one of the really important keys to look into how you develop your solutions, how you're going to use these new methods of deployments into via Azure Resource Management and ensure that you you do it in, via a secure way.
And lest anyone thinks that this is just two security people who are paranoid, there have been documented attacks. There's a well-known website. I won't give the name here, but you can probably find it online. There was a relatively popular site that was actually taken down. They went out of business because they were the victims of a denial of service attack. And then when they warded that off, the attackers pulled their super secret Trump card out of the back pocket, which was they had found this company's storage account keys or subscription key in code that had been checked into GitHub. And they turned around and erased all of this company's code, all of their data, everything. For a customer born in the cloud without backups, that's a death blow. And this company did go out of business as a result.
Wow, that's scary. Is that the worst example that you've run into?
For a purely cloud-based solution, yes. I mean, of course, there have been numerous attacks. To me, that's the one that really stands out because we've seen a rush towards moving everything online. But if the only place you have things is online, then you don't potentially have any easy means of recovery. So we're starting to see some customers that are taking a truly hybrid approach so that instead of just relying on backups purely in the cloud, they're also backing them up to a one-way offline solution so that there's no way that the attackers can compromise this. It's kind of the same thing as what Microsoft have done with Consumer OneDrive, where there's a one-way write so that if somebody uses ransomware and attacks all of your files, locks them all up, there are still unencrypted copies saved in a backup area that the attacker can't access so that you can always restore those older files.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we do backups as well, right? How does that work?
I don't know. I don't know that we actually do backups directly. I thought that it was part of our terms of service that we're not responsible for backing up the content.
Ah, okay.
I don't know. Read the terms of service when you sign up for any consumer site.
Yeah, of course. I thought we did, but maybe we don't. I mean, I didn't know for sure that we did. So,
yeah. And so, it kind of drives the point back that, you know, when we talk with the customers, we're trying to stress that they need to adapt their governance and their policies to the cloud-enabled world, and they still have to apply the same type of control that they have on premises. They need to plan for disaster recovery. They need to figure out if certain, you know, applications or data centers or whatever is getting basically lost, how do they recover in that situation. They still have to. They cannot just say, hey, it's in the cloud there, it's all there, we will recover it. It's still same type of, you know, controls has to be tested, validated as they do in on-premises environments. So.
And the actual process of updating their policies, I think, is a fantastic opportunity for the organizations to actually increase the maturity of their own documentation. Many customers that I worked with in the past said that they have a requirement to take backups. And I always kind of turned it around and drove it back on them. Do you really have a requirement to take backups, or do you have a requirement to be able to recover data in the event of an outage? They're two very different things. They didn't actually have a requirement for backups. That was the solution to meet the requirement, which was actually to recover data in the event of a failure. So there are different ways that they can do that. They can do it through online backups, offline backups, redundant copies, various forms of clustering and data transfer and data synchronization. So the customers, they can use additional tools to basically gain greater capabilities in the name of security.
So in most, you know, in-house data centers, we've got people that are essentially jack of all trades, right? You know, they're system administrator. Some of them are responsible for security, et cetera. How does that change in the cloud model?
Sure. So one of the things we observe with our customers and in this cloud-enabled world and as they deliver solutions into especially infrastructure as a service type of implementations, that people who architect and deliver solutions into this type of environments, they have to converge their skills. They're no longer can just specialize in one thing and say, you know, they know how to develop or deliver virtual machines. They have to understand to really to deploy a secure solution. They have to understand multiple areas of technology, because really in a, say, if you take an Azure infrastructure as a service, everything enabled via software. So if you want to deliver and develop a secure solution, let's say with some application that provides access from the internet and you have multi-tier type of infrastructure, in the past, in your data center, you had to work with potentially with firewall people, with security people, with different disaster recovery people, with audit and security. So it's multiple teams that had to work together and come up with a solution that will provide you this sort of, you know, what type of port needs to be open, where your front web applications, where databases sit, where your Active Directory or authentication components. So it's really was distributed environment in the physical data centers. As we move it into Azure environment, infrastructure as a service, everything is configured or can be configured via Azure portal, or it can be configured via PowerShell commands or some other mechanism, but it's all there in the portal. It's all done via software-based controls. So you as an architect, as administrator, as a developer of that application, now have to think and understand how you apply all the different controls, how you design your virtual networks, how you apply network security groups, where you apply the ports. Do you need to put some kind of virtual network appliance somewhere in the middle? How do you do authentication against your applications and where you put your databases, et cetera? So it's kind of, it's interesting that you no longer have to understand just one area of your sort of specialty. You have to really understand the whole stack if you really want to provide, create a secure application. So in many ways, it's a challenging type of thing, because many times we specialize in just, say, database development, but now you have to sort of, you know, you have to branch out and learn new skills, which is a goodness in a way, but at the same time, it's put more stress on folks to develop those type of skills. So if
you're used to doing everything, you kind of still have to do a lot of those types of things. If you're kind of, you know, a one-trick pony, in other words, you know, you just deal with the database or you just deal with security, you know, those are things that you know, there's some growth that'll probably be needed there.
You still might be, you know, if you super specialize, say, in only database, you might continue to specialize in the database, but same time, you have to learn how we actually deploy the database into Azure in a high availability sort of way. How you do make sure that those databases talk to each other across different data centers in a high availability way. So obviously, as we move into the cloud, you have to learn new skills. From an sort of, if you are an architect and you design a solution, then you have to really understand all of the new concepts of how this works in the cloud-enabled world. How do you enforce those controls via software-based controls without any type of really physical firewalls in the middle or anything like that? Because it's all have to be defined now. Even you can apply a cert and use third-party products that we have on the marketplace. Those are all, it's really software type of, you know, based solutions. And you have to envision this, how it all works in this sort of, conceptually maybe the same as you did in the physical environment, but you have to apply into the software-based environment. And now another challenge is coming there, that because all of this is done, really, say if you say you deploy a solution in Azure subscription, how do you provide and how do you separate the roles in that subscription? It's not like you now you have sort of, you know, in a data center you have physical racks and firewalls and servers and, you know, virtual hosts. Here everything is done via the same portal. So you have to figure out how to do this role separation between multiple organizations inside of your company, between your security folks and between your auditors and between folks who are actually going to administer those virtual machines or other specific controls inside of that specific deployment. So it brings some new challenges that obviously everybody is hard working right now, figure out and create proper models to make sure that we have a proper role-based access and, you know, privileged access and all other type of controls to ensure that people don't step on each other and have the right way to control the resources that they need to control in inside of Azure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think proper role assignment is huge.
Sorry to step on you there, Lex.
No, that's okay. And go ahead, John.
Something we've seen has been as customers look to kind of dip their toes in the water to learn a little bit about Azure, we've seen basically somebody just starting a subscription that becomes the de facto subscription for the entire organization. So Jerry, a single developer somewhere in the overall company, Jerry created an Azure sub, and other people, as they learn about it, start to use the same subscription. It then becomes the de facto solution for the entire organization, but it's under the control of just one guy, just Jerry. And if Jerry isn't administering the solution in a very safe and secure way, everything within the subscription, all of the other development work, all of the other business data, Office 365, Azure Active Directory, all of that is at risk because this one person who is not basically being a secure administrator is putting he's exposing his credentials to the internet, daily use, opening spam emails, and so on. It's important that customers understand that the subscription administrators are the most powerful people and that they can take control of the entire subscription, any resource within it. So those credentials must be protected more. Now, obviously, you can't access those the cloud from a non-internet connected workstation. That's part of the trade-off of outsourcing to cloud computing. So it's important to, at the very least, separate that identity from somebody that does other things. That person should not be browsing the internet. Other websites should not be receiving email. And I would even argue, obviously, given that I'm a PAW person, I would argue that you would only do the subscription administration from a privileged access workstation. But subscription administrators are fundamentally the most valuable object in that directory, and they must be treated as such.
Yeah. And kind of thing is, we preach this to all of our customers, and personally, I have yet to see a customer that use a dedicated workstation for management of their Azure subscriptions. So we tell them, and the first question I ask usually when I talk with a customer, so, okay, do you have a separate identity for, you know, for privileged accounts to manage Azure? And some of them say yes, some of them say no. The next question, do you have a dedicated, or what workstation you actually open your browser from? Is it your same workstation that you use email and browse internet? I don't know.
Yeah.
They hope it's not.
People right. used RunAs for years and years.
Yeah,
and
exactly
we've shown
correct.
Now that RunAs yeah. isn't actually a security boundary.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, customers fall into habits, and it takes a lifetime to build them and then to break them. So Dimitri and I, among others, are trying to get the word out on secure cloud administration. We realize it's a big change. We have sympathy and empathy for those folks that are kind of struggling to learn it. But at the same time, the cloud does require you to learn new skills, does require new things, but it also takes off some of the burden. Imagine never having to patch again. That's kind of a cool thing, knowing that you're always up to date and that you never have to go into your patching solution, whether it's System Center or another, you know, Alteryx or some third-party product. You never have to do it again. Oh, that would be fantastic. So it's addition by subtraction. We're subtracting some things so that you can add other functionality, whether it's more intentional data management or more robust or more frequent code changes for your applications. It doesn't matter what it is. It enables, taking away some of the other drudgery, enables you to do more with the solutions that you have.
Yep. And kind of to piggyback on that too, is what I see is many customers, they actually, even if they say adopt infrastructure as a service, let's say they deploy an application that's run on Windows service and infrastructure as a service, they really, from their executive management, the goal is to use any type of supporting solution to investigate if they can adopt a software as a service type of solution. Let's say if they want to do some kind of audit or logging or, you know, alerting or, you know, basically all the control that surround that potential application. They want to see if they don't want to bring their on-premises sort of boxed products into the cloud. They want to see if they can adopt something that is actually managed by the provider that they don't want to patch, they don't want to maintain. They'll just subscribe to it, they configure it, and they can sort of use those products to monitor or to whatever other type of control they need to do. Like say an example, operations management suite, it's our software as a service really solution to get all the logs and alerts from all the virtual machines into that type of environment would be like an example of that type of solution.
Those are solutions that can only really exist in a cloud environment because you don't have scale otherwise. Go ahead, Lex.
So if somebody wants like a top 10 list or a white paper or something along those lines about, you know, best practices, what to do and what not to do, do we have something like that, Dimitri?
So the good check for the white papers and new blogs and information about Azure security is to check Microsoft Azure Security and Compliance blog. So Tom Schinder writes on it almost on a daily basis, and he provides links and information. So you can go there and you'll find actually references to the white papers and like 13 security recommendations for the cloud and other new developments that happen in Azure, like Azure Security Center and many other type of things. White papers about Azure networking and privileged identity management and many other things. So basically it's a Azure Security and Compliance blog that it's a good place to start.
And awesome.
I want to piggyback on something that Dimitri just said, because he highlighted a really important split. He said it's the Security and Compliance blog, and I know a lot of people kind of commingle the two, but they are separate topics. Compliance is something that you do to satisfy regulatory or legal requirements. Security is what you do to protect your business. So something like ISO 27001, although we describe it as information security standards, it's actually a compliance standard. HIPAA dictates how information about patients must be protected, but it's actually a compliance standard. Nobody will ever be prosecuted for following HIPAA to the letter and securing their information, but it is not they are separate things. They are not combined. Compliance is about satisfying legal requirements, while security is, in my view, doing the right thing and ensuring that nobody can basically misuse or surreptitiously or fraudulently access information. So although we try to emphasize the difference between security and compliance, we recognize that it's easy to think about them together. So if you ever have any questions about what Microsoft does for compliance or security in the cloud, we actually have a fantastic resource. It's the Microsoft Azure Trust Center. The name has changed a couple of times. It used to be the Azure Trust Center, then it was the Microsoft Trust Center, and now I think it's the Microsoft Azure Trust Center. We'll get the link put up on screen, I guess. I'm not sure how Chris is going to work his magic in the background, but it's azure.microsoft.com/en-us, or replace that with the language you want to read it in, /support/trust-center. And again, I think Chris can put that on screen for you or provide it in associated links. It's a great resource for talking not just about the security pieces, but the compliance pieces. It has links to all of the appropriate places. And it really highlights the amount of work that we have done in order to ensure that customers can use cloud no matter which industry, which region, or which levels of protection that they require, whether you're government, whether you're in Germany or France or Australia, if you have geographic restrictions on the data. We've done a lot of work to try to make sure that the cloud can help you meet those requirements.
Awesome. Hey, guys, any final thoughts? Dimitri?
Cloud is here to stay. Learn your skills, improve your skills. Figure out where you fit, you know, see your future in this cloud-enabled world, because it's here to stay, and we have to deal with this. So change and go with the flow.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be the theme, I think, is change and go with the flow.
My final thoughts would be, number one, don't confuse control, losing control with becoming more insecure. The cloud is, in many cases, much more secure than anything customers can do on premises. Second, take a look at the information on the Trust Center and the Azure Security blog, and you can see all of the investments that we've made into helping make the Microsoft cloud the most secure cloud. I realize it sounds like I'm a marketing guy, but as a security professional, I firmly believe that we have the most secure cloud in the world. And then last, and certainly not least, it's absolutely essential that customers look at cloud based on what they're trying to do, as opposed to trying to mirror the things that they've done historically. They need to achieve the same why, but they won't achieve it the same ways. It's you're doing things for the same reason. How you achieve them are going to be different in a cloud-enabled world.
And that's a huge opportunity, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, guys, thank you both for coming on the show. I mean, I this has been a great topic for me. I really, to be honest with you, didn't know what to expect. I mean, I knew what we were going to talk about, but, you know, I had no idea that customers had to do a lot of the things that we talked about, but it certainly all makes sense. So thank you guys for coming on.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having us back.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, guys, that's it for the show today. So I'm just going to give you some time back. That's your taste of Premiere.